Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Happy Saturday, everybody. Earlier this week, we did an episode on Robert Liston, who did groundbreaking work in the field of surgery in the 19th century, but became better known for some really gruesome and possibly apocryphal moments in his career. In that episode, we very briefly mentioned the lack of cadavers available for medical study at that time.
And we mentioned that there was more on this in our prior episode on the Doctor's Riot of 1788, which came out on July 16th, 2014. So we thought this would be the perfect time to put that episode back into the feed. It's a story that combines medical history, racism, classism, mob violence, and changing attitudes about dissection and medical study.
Yeah, that's a lot. So, enjoy.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
So, back when the podcast Sawbones launched, we talked about it a couple of times on the show and on our Twitter and stuff like that. It's been a while since we brought up Sawbones, which is a comedy podcast about medical history that's hosted by Sydney and Justin McElroy. And I was catching up on their show on the plane last week, and I listened to their episode called Corpse Theft and the Resurrection Men, which included, among other things, a little about the Doctor's Riot of 1788, which is what we're going to talk about today, because it sort of whetted my appetite to talk more about that and to learn more about that. So if you already listened to Sawbones, which I know some of our listeners do listen to Sawbones, there's some crossover there. We are definitely going to talk in more detail about just the Doctor's Riot and the context that led up to it. And this is definitely a different angle than Sawbones. So you know, there's going to be new stuff in here, even if you listened to that episode.
So, for context, in 1765, North America got its first medical school at the College of Philadelphia. And from the beginning, medical students at the College of Philadelphia worked with patients at the Pennsylvania Hospital, gradually developing the blueprint for today's medical schools and teaching hospitals.
This program wasn't meant to be a person's sole source of medical education, though. And the same was true of other medical schools that opened up during the colonial period and after the Revolutionary War. At this point, most people became doctors through apprenticeships, and America's first medical schools were intended to be this sort of period of additional focused study for people who had already finished their apprenticeship, so they already effectively were doctors before they even went to medical school.
There was also a lot of anatomical study on cadavers in these programs. And the idea that doctors needed to learn anatomy and that dissecting cadavers was a good way to do this had become really prevalent during the 18th century.
The thing that had not become really prevalent was a big supply of cadavers to dissect.
The idea of donating your body to science really did not exist at this point. Most colonies either had no laws governing how bodies might be used for medical study, or they specifically prohibited certain uses. For example, dissecting unclaimed bodies. There was definitely no regulation of how cadavers might be legally obtained and delivered. So schools needed these bodies for legitimate study, but they had no legal channels to get them.
Plus, there were all kinds of religious and cultural taboos that made people pretty opposed to the idea of having their bodies cut up and examined after they were dead. Among Christians and Jews, the body was sacred. Various Christian denominations believed that being cut up after death was sacrilegious and it would prevent them from getting into heaven or from being resurrected on Judgment Day. Similar beliefs about the sacredness of the body also ran through African traditions that slaves had brought with them.
And being a doctor at this point in time did not have the prestige and the clout that it does today, at least in the Western world. So people were not particularly inclined to go against all of these layers of taboo to let their bodies be cut up by doctors. And it didn't help that British medical schools had been using executed criminals for their dissections. So this made American communities associate being dissected with being a criminal or with being punished.
Although it was illegal, there were some schools that got their bodies from prisons and almshouses and other institutions. They would covertly buy the bodies of people who had died before they even were buried. But really, the primary source of cadavers for a really long time was grave robbing.
And this, of course, had its own social and religious implications. So churchyards were and remain, for many people, sacred. Bodies, sacred. So digging up bodies out of graveyards and cutting them up was a gross offense. And it made doctors, who already weren't particularly well-respected, seem like they had just this wanton disregard for human life and just no regard for basic decency.
There were doctors and students who dug up their own cadavers, but they mostly outsourced that work to people who were known as resurrectionists, who did the actual grave robbing.
I feel like this would be a great series on one of the secondary channels, the resurrectionists. They had this process, the resurrectionists, down to a science. So at this point, embalming was not widely used. It, you know, had culturally in history, it had happened in many places, but in terms of like the modern approach to it, that was not really common. So these guys had to work quickly, ideally within hours of burial. It was kind of like a heist movie, except it involved graves instead of like a bank. And instead of digging up the whole length of the casket, they'd work just from the head and they would weaken one end of the casket by drilling holes in it before bashing it in and just pulling the body out through the hole with hooks, getting in and out of the place within an hour and timing the passing of their getaway vehicle so they could slip the body into it and escape.
The graves that were at the biggest risk of being robbed were the ones that belonged to poor people and slaves. And these were the people who were least likely to have someone watching out for the grave after the people died. In both of these places, the resurrectionists did not have to be quite as on the ball with their, you know, their heist shenanigans, because most of the people who were being buried in cemeteries for the poor and for slaves didn't have the money to buy a coffin, so they were buried directly in the dirt. In the words of Harriet Martineau, who was writing an account of a trip in the 1800s, quote, "In Baltimore, the bodies of colored people exclusively are taken for dissection because the whites do not like it and the colored people cannot resist."
So although the overwhelming majority of stolen bodies were those of Black people and poor people, having money or status was not necessarily a protection. High-profile body thefts made headlines, such as the time that a search party found the body of John Harrison, who was son of President William Henry Harrison and father of President Benjamin Harrison, at a medical college in Cincinnati.
This meant that people who could afford it would bury their loved ones in these sealed iron coffins, or they would surround the whole gravesite in this metal cage that covered the whole thing. Some of them who had the money to even hired armed guards to watch over their newly buried bodies.
And regardless of who you were, your body really was not safe from theft until it had been in the ground for about 2 weeks in the winter, shorter in the summer, at which point it would be too decomposed to be dissected.
And before we move on to exactly what was happening in New York at the time of this particular riot, let's have a brief moment for a word from a sponsor.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In New York, where the riot that we're talking about today took place, A major source of bodies for cadaver study was the Potter's Field, where the poor and the unknown were buried in unmarked graves. The other big source was the Negroes' burial ground, which was, kind of coincidentally, quite close to New York Hospital.
Nearly all of New York City's Black population was buried in Negroes' burial ground. There was only one church that buried Black people in a segregated churchyard, and it charged a fee to do so. As body theft from the Negroes' burial ground became more and more commonplace, freed slaves would actually buy land to use as private cemeteries. This didn't necessarily help, since these private burial grounds sometimes became targets of their own.
New York City's demand for all these cadavers came from two sources. One was its medical school at Columbia College, and the other was Richard Bailey, who was a doctor from Connecticut. And he was teaching not-for-credit medical classes at New York Hospital, which we just mentioned was very close to the Negroes' burial ground. And that made the Negroes' burial ground an easy target for grave robbers.
So both freed people and slaves in New York at this time had become increasingly upset at the prevalence of grave robbing from the Black burial spaces. In early February of 1788, a group of 2,000 slaves and 1,000 freed people began petitioning the city's common council, including the mayor and aldermen, not for the grave robbing to stop, but for it at least to be carried out in a decent and respectful way.
This petition read, in part, "Most humbly, sirs, we declare that it has lately been the practice of a number of young gentlemen in this city who call themselves students of the physic to repair to the burying ground assigned for the use of your petitioners. Under cover of night, in the most wanton sallies of excess, they dig up bodies of our deceased friends and relatives of your petitioners, carrying them away without respect for age or sex, mangle their flesh out of a wanton curiosity, and then expose it to beasts and birds. Your petitioners are well aware of the necessity of physicians and surgeons consulting dead subjects for the benefit of mankind. Your petitioners do not presuppose it as an injury to the deceased and would not be adverse to dissection in particular circumstances, that is, if it is conducted with the decency and propriety which the solemnity of such occasion requires. Your petitioners do not wish to impede the work of these students of the physic, but most humbly pray your honors to take our case into consideration and adopt such measure as may seem to prevent further abuses in the future."
Their petition was ignored.
But on February 21st, so only a couple of weeks later, the Daily Advertiser published an anonymous report about how, quote, "Few Blacks are buried whose bodies are permitted to remain in the grave," end quote. Through the rest of February and part of March, the Daily Advertiser went on to publish really horrifying accounts of grave desecration and body theft.
And then things came to a head in April.
There are several conflicting reports of exactly what started the riot, so it's not completely clear exactly what happened. But there are three pretty common elements among all the various retellings.
The first is that on April 13th, some doctors and their teacher were dissecting a cadaver in a lab at New York Hospital.
The second is that by some means or another, a boy got a glimpse of what was going on through the window and the doctors saw him.
And the third is that one of the surgeons, probably in an attempt to scare the boy off, waved the cadaver's arm at him.
In some versions of the story, one of the doctors shouted that it was the boy's mother's arm. And by coincidence, this boy's mother had died very recently. This version of the story usually goes on to say that the boy ran home and told his father, who exhumed his mother's grave, only to find it empty. That seems like a lot of things that had to happen just that way.
It feels like an urban legend.
Yeah. Something definitely happened to spark the whole riot, but this particular version of the story is completely retold, but I read a couple of things that kind of went back through all of the earliest correspondence and news reports, and we're like, there's not actual documentation of exactly what really tipped the scale.
But regardless of how exactly this whole thing started, a mob soon descended upon New York Hospital.
In a letter to Virginia Governor Edmund Randolph, Colonel William Heth described it this way. The cry of barbarity and etc. was soon spread. The young sons of Galen fled in every direction. One took refuge in a chimney. The mob raised and the hospital apartments were ransacked. In the anatomy room were found three fresh bodies, one boiling in a kettle and two others cut up, with certain parts of the two sex hanging up in a most brutal position. The circumstances, together with the wanton and apparent inhuman complexion in the room, exasperated the mob beyond all bounds to the total destruction of every anatomy in the hospital.
And while many of the doctors and the teachers did indeed flee, some stayed behind to try to protect the cadavers, the other specimens, and the teaching materials. But the mob that arrived at the hospital dragged all of this out into the street and they set it on fire.
They also reburied the bodies that had not been dissected yet.
The mayor, James Duane, arrived with the sheriff and put the doctors and teachers into protective custody at the jail.
This calmed things down a little bit, but during the night, medical students from Columbia, fearing that their school was going to be the next target, went into the school to hide all of their anatomical materials and cadavers so that they would not be burned and destroyed as well.
And this turned out to be a fortunate move, since during the night, two medical students, George Swinney and Isaac Gano, broke into a churchyard and stole the body of a well-known white woman, which meant that the mob that formed the next morning was immense and furious. It swelled to about 5,000 people.
This mob was bound and determined to find and destroy anything that was being used for anatomical study at Columbia. So they searched the entire college, including the dorms, and they went on to search doctors' homes. One person they ran across was even beaten solely for wearing black, which was the color that the doctors usually wore.
And when the mob found nothing, they all ended up going to the jail, where they started an assault on the building with rocks and bricks. They tore down the gallows to use the wood as a weapon.
As the rocks and the bricks broke windows and made their way into the cells where people were being held, the doctors and the students started collecting them along with broken glass to defend themselves.
And this riot went on for another full day until the governor called out the militia. They brought in a brigade and artillery.
In the ensuing melee, it's similarly not clear exactly what happened, but ultimately at least three rioters and three militiamen were killed. The final death toll is often cited at 20.
And afterwards, residents of New York doubled down on their efforts to protect the bodies of the dead. Armed groups called Dead Guardmen started to keep watch over cemeteries.
Bailey and the other doctors fudged the truth by saying they had never asked anyone to steal a body from one of the city's graveyards. The reason this was not really on the up and up was that the Potter's Field and the Negro's burial ground were both outside of the city limits. And in fact, at this point, Black people could only be buried outside the city limits.
So what they were saying was technically true, but it was really pretty weaselly.
Yes.
There was a grand jury investigation, but no charges seemed to have been filed. And no one was convicted, possibly because both the rioters and the doctors were breaking the law.
This riot, apart from destroying anatomical equipment and samples and causing some deaths, had some ongoing ramifications, which we're going to talk about after a word from a sponsor.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts. or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
So the Doctors' Riot, which was in 1788, was only one of the anatomy riots in the United States. Between 1765 and 1854, there were at least 17 of them. They took place primarily in New England, where most of the medical colleges were at the time, but there were also riots as far west as Ohio and Illinois.
And these were not at, like, fly-by-night shady schools. In an 1824 riot, the target of this mob aggression was actually Yale University.
In January of 1789, which was the year after the Doctors' Riot in New York took place, the New York legislature passed laws that made grave robbing illegal, and they earmarked certain crimes as being punishable by, quote, dissection after death. So there would be a legal supply of bodies. But this didn't provide enough bodies for the medical study that was going on. So the grave robbing did continue, particularly in potter's fields and black cemeteries.
Massachusetts passed a law making it legal to dissect unclaimed bodies in 1831. New York did the same thing in 1854. But other laws were a little bit slower in coming. By 1913, Louisiana and Alabama still had no legal way for medical schools to obtain cadavers, while most other states had passed laws allowing unclaimed bodies, donated bodies, and the bodies of executed criminals to be dissected.
Even then, the bodies that were being dissected in medical schools were disproportionately those of poor people and minorities, so they were people who couldn't afford burials or their families couldn't afford to claim their bodies. And grave robbing for cadaver purposes continued in the United States until the 1920s.
In the 1960s and 1970s, the medical establishment worked to change people's perceptions of dissection and of donating bodies to science.
In 1968, the National Conference of the Commissioners on Uniform State Laws approved the Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, or UAGA. And this made donating your body a choice and a gift. And it also gave the person who was doing the donating, so the person whose body it actually was, the ultimate say in what would happen to them. So if you wanted to donate your body, it would be donated, even if your next of kin objected to the choice that you had made. Almost every state had adopted this law or something very similar to it within a few years.
And today, bequests actually make up the large majority of cadavers, which completely changed the demographic of dissected bodies in medical schools.
Yeah. One of my sources cited a personal communication from somebody at Duke University Medical School from about 10 years ago. And at that point, according to this personal correspondence, the cadavers at Duke were overwhelmingly those of Caucasian people. I could not find statistics for the broader all of United States Medical School or in general people who are donating their bodies. But this whole shift in it from being a thing that happens to you if you can't afford to be buried to a thing you choose to do totally changed the whole picture of it.
Which is very fascinating stuff.
And kind of gruesome.
It is. But, it's good that people recognize that science needs their body after they have shuffled off this mortal coil.
Thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday. If you have heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar over the course of today's episode, since it is from the archive, that might be out of date now. You can email us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. And you can find us all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.